Hey guys. So, as many of you have recently been aware of, anybody who has checked the Facebook page or the website, this episode is going to be a little bit different. I'm still going to count these episodes as normal episodes, so this is going to be episode number 42, but we're going to have random episodes pulling in at random times. I'm still going to do guest appearances and topic-style episodes, but I'm also going to add in something that I love doing and I absolutely love listening to and reading and looking into and studying. Anything dark and evil and morbid and just metal as fuck. So I'll have a theme for each different episode. Some of them will be creepypastas, some of them will be serial killer bios, and just, you know, maybe some like mythical shit, just a bunch of cool shit. So this episode is just me. I'm gonna be reading a creepypasta. This one's a pretty infamous story. Before we get into that, this episode of the podcast is going to be brought to you by somebody a little bit different. Check out Black Craft Cult Clothing. It's pretty cool stuff. Dark, morbid, cool shit. Go to blackcraftcultclothing.com, or it just might be Black Craft Cult. I probably should have double checked, but yeah, whatever. Advertising, right? Also, go to chantelbenedictart.squarespace.com and buy some art. Put a lot of time and effort into the website. And she puts a lot of time and effort into her art. Love supporting local artists and stuff. So check that stuff out, you guys. This episode is... this is the first creepypasta. I'm pretty excited about it. So this is a pretty infamous story. This is the Russian sleep experiment. I hope you guys enjoy it. Let's just get right into it, shall we?
Big of the devil. This shall appear.
You're about to be killed by a Zamboni.
Now I am become death, the destroyer of worlds.
Relaxed and smiling.
I'd like to take this chance to apologize to absolutely nobody. The double champ does what the f*** he wants.
Oh yeah.
Give me a hell yeah!
I've got some man! What the rock is cooking!
Why are you screaming? I haven't even caught you yet.
What do you have to say about that?
Anderson Silva, you absolutely suck!
Sleep. Something many of us take for granted every night when we close our eyes. Some people do not have the ability to fall asleep on a regular schedule. Some people work jobs that don't allow them to have a regular schedule, and some of us just struggle. For those of you who fall asleep very quickly, very quietly, very easily at night, you might not ever understand what it feels like to lie awake in the night and stare at the ceiling and have drift-offs and daydreams super bad the next day, and you probably take it for granted not knowing what you have. But for the rest of us, those of us who have insomnia, stresses, things that keep us awake all night long, we know that pain. We know what it's like to lie awake trying everything, medication, TV, no TV, books, candles, white noise, and not get that sweet, sweet relief. Well, for some people, this can be even taken to the more extreme. And this story that I'm going to read to you today is a perfect example of that. Russian researchers in the late 1940s kept five people awake for 15 days using an experimental gas-based stimulant. They were kept in a sealed environment to carefully monitor their oxygen intake so the gas didn't kill them, since it was toxic in high concentrations. This was before closed-circuit cameras, so they only had microphones and 5-inch-thick glass porthole-sized windows into the chamber so they could monitor. The chamber was stocked with books, cots to sleep on, but no bedding, running water and toilet. and enough dried food to last all five for over a month. The test subjects were political prisoners deemed enemies of the state during World War II. Everything was fine for the first 5 days. The subjects hardly complained, having promised, falsely albeit, that they would be freed if they submitted to the test and did not sleep for 30 days. Their conversations and activities were monitored, and it was noted that they continued to talk about increasingly traumatic incidents in their past, and the general tone of their conversations took on a darker aspect after the 4-day mark. After 5 days, they started to complain about the circumstances and events that led them to where they were and started to demonstrate severe paranoia. They stopped talking to each other and began alternately whispering to the microphones and one-way mirrored portholes. Oddly, they all seemed to think they could win the trust of the experimenters by turning over their comrades, the other subjects in captivity with them. At first, the researchers suspected this was an effect of the gas itself. And after 9 days, the first of them started screaming. He ran the length of the chamber, repeatedly yelling at the top of his lungs for 3 straight hours. He continued attempting to scream, but was only able to produce occasional squeaks. The researchers had postulated that he had physically torn his own vocal cords. The most surprising thing about this behavior is how the other captives reacted to it, or rather, didn't react to it. They continued whispering to the microphones until the second of the captives started to scream. The two non-screaming captives took the books apart, smeared pages after pages with their own feces, and pasted them calmly over the glass portholes. The screaming promptly stopped, and so did the whispering to the microphones. After 3 more days passed, the researchers checked the microphones hourly to make sure they were working, since they thought it impossible that no sound could be coming with 5 people inside. The oxygen consumption in the chamber indicated that all 5 must still be alive. In fact, it was the amount of oxygen 5 people would consume at a very heavy level of strenuous exercise. On the morning of the 14th day, the researchers did something they said they would not do to get a reaction from the captives. They used the intercom inside the chamber, hoping to provoke any response from the captives they were afraid were either dead or vegetables. They announced, "We're opening the chamber to test the microphones. Step away from the door and lie flat on the floor or you will be shot. Compliance will earn one of you your immediate freedom." To their surprise, they heard a single phrase and a calm voice response. "We no longer want to be freed." Debate broke out among the researchers and the military forces funding the research. Unable to provoke any more response using the intercom, it was finally decided to open the chamber at midnight on the 15th day. The chamber was flushed of the stimulant gas and filled with fresh air, and immediately voices from the microphones began to object. 3 different voices began begging, as if pleading for the life of loved ones to turn the gas back on. The chamber was opened and soldiers sent in to retrieve the test subjects. They began to scream louder than ever, and so did the soldiers when they saw what was inside. 4 of the 5 subjects were still alive, although no one could rightly call the state that any of them were in life. The food rations past day 5 had not been so much as touched. There were chunks of meat from the dead test subjects, thighs and chest stuffed into the drain in the center of the chamber, blocking the drain and allowing 4 inches of water to accumulate on the floor. Precisely how much of the water on the floor was actually blood was never determined. All 4 surviving test subjects had large portions of muscle and skin torn away from their bodies. The deconstruction of flesh and exposed bone on their fingertips indicated that the wounds were inflicted by hand, not with teeth as the researchers initially thought. Closer examination of the position and angles of the wounds indicated that most, if not all of them, were self-inflicted. The abdominal organs below the ribcage of all 4 test subjects have been removed, while the heart, lungs, and diaphragm remained in place. The skin and most of the muscles attached to the ribs have been ripped off, exposing the lungs through the ribcage. All the blood vessels and organs remained intact. They had just been taken out and laid on the floor, fanning out around the eviscerated but still living bodies of the subjects. The digestive tract of all 4 could be seen to be working, digesting food. It quickly became apparent that what they were digesting was their own flesh that they had ripped off and eaten over the course of days. Most of the soldiers were Russian special operatives at the facility, but still many refused to return to the chamber to remove the test subjects. They continued to scream to be left in the chamber and alternatively begged and demanded that the gas be turned back on, lest they fall asleep. To everyone's surprise, the test subjects put up a fierce fight in the process of being removed from the chamber. One of the Russian soldiers died from having his throat ripped out, Another was gravely injured by having his testicles ripped off and an artery in his leg severed by one of the subject's teeth. Another 5 of the soldiers lost their lives if you count the ones that committed suicide in the weeks following the incident. In the struggle, one of the 4 living subjects had his spleen ruptured and he bled out almost immediately. The medical researchers attempted to sedate him, but this proved to be impossible. He was injected with more than 10 times the human dose of a morphine derivative and still fought like a cornered animal, breaking the ribs and arm of one of the doctors. His heart was seen to beat for a full 2 minutes after he had bled out to the point where there was more air in his vascular system than blood. Even after it stopped, he continued to scream and flail for another 3 minutes, struggling to attack anyone in reach and just repeating the word "more" over and over, weaker and weaker, until he finally fell silent. The surviving 3 test subjects were heavily restrained and moved to a medical facility, the 2 with intact vocal cords continuously begging for the gas and demanding to be kept awake. The most injured of the 3 was taken to the only surgical operating room that the facility had. In the process of preparing the subject to have his organs placed back within his body, it was found that he was effectively immune to the sedative that they had given him to prepare him for the surgery. He fought furiously against his restraints when anesthetic gas was brought to put him under. He managed to tear most of the way through a 4-inch wide leather strap on one of his wrists, even through the weight of a 200-pound soldier holding that wrist as well. It took only a little more anesthetic than a normal person to put him under, and the instant his eyelids fluttered and closed, his heart stopped. In the autopsy of the test subject that died on the operating table, it was found that his blood had tripled the normal level of oxygen. His muscles that were still attached to his skeleton were badly torn, and he had broken 9 bones in his struggle to not be subdued. Most of them were from the force his own muscles had exerted on them. The second survivor had been the first of the group of 5 to start screaming. His vocal cords destroyed, he was unable to beg or object to surgery, and he only reacted by shaking his head violently in disapproval when the anesthetic gas was brought near him. He shook his head yes when someone suggested reluctantly that they try the surgery without anesthetic, and did not react for the entire 6-hour procedure of replacing his abdominal organs and attempting to cover them with whatever skin he had left. The surgeon presiding stated repeatedly that it should be medically impossible for this patient to still be alive, and one terrified nurse assisting the surgery stated that she had seen the patient mouth curl into a smile several times whenever his eyes met hers. When the surgery ended, the subject looked at the surgeon and began to wheeze loudly, attempting to talk while struggling. Assuming this must be something of drastic importance, the surgeon had a pen and a pad fetched so the patient could write his message. It was simple. Keep cutting. The other 2 test subjects were given the same surgery, both without anesthetic as well, although they had to be injected with a paralytic for the duration of the operation. The surgeon found it impossible to perform the operation while the patients laughed continuously. Once paralyzed, the subjects could only follow the attending researchers with their eyes. But the paralytic compound cleared their system in an abnormally short period of time, and they were soon trying to escape their bonds. The moment they could speak, they were again asking for the stimulant gas. The researchers tried asking why they had injured themselves, why they had ripped out their own guts, and why they wanted to be given the gas again. Only one response was given. I must remain awake. All 3 subjects' restraints were reinforced and they were placed back into the chamber awaiting determination as to what should be done with them. The researchers, facing the wrath of their military benefactors for having failed the stay's goal of their project, considered euthanizing the subjects. The commanding officer, an XKBG agent, instead saw potential and wanted to see what would happen if they were to be placed back into the gas. The researchers strongly objected, but were overruled. In preparation for being sealed in the chamber again, the subjects were connected to an EEG monitor and had their restraints padded for long-term confinement. To everyone's surprise, all 3 stopped struggling the moment it was let slip that they were going back into the gas. It was obvious at this point, all 3 were putting up a great struggle to stay awake. One of the subjects that could speak was humming loudly and continuously. The mute subject was straining his legs against the leather bands with all his might, first left, then right, then left again, for something to focus on. The remaining subject was holding his head off his pillow and blinking rapidly. Having been the first to be wired for EEG, most of the researchers were monitoring his brain waves in surprise. They were normal most of the time, but sometimes flatlined inexplicably. It looked as if he were repeatedly suffering from brain death before returning to normal. As they focused on a paper scrolling out of the brainwave monitor, only one nurse saw his eyes slip shut, and at the same moment his head hit the pillow. His brainwaves immediately changed to that of deep sleep, then flatlined for the last time, as his heart simultaneously stopped. The only remaining subject that could speak started screaming to be sealed in now. His brainwaves showed the same flat lines as the one who had just died from falling asleep. The commander gave the order to seal the chamber with both subjects inside, as well as three researchers. One of the named three immediately drew his gun and shot the commander point blank between the eyes, then turned the gun on the mute subject and blew his brains out as well. He pointed his gun at the remaining subject, strode straight into the bed, as the remaining members of the medical and research team fled the room. "I won't be locked in here with these things, not with you," he screamed at the man still strapped to the table. "What are you?" he demanded. "I must know." The subject smiled. "Have you forgotten so easily?" the subject said. "We are you. We are the madness that lurks within you all, begging to be free at every moment in your deepest animal mind. We are what you hide from in your beds every night. We are what you sedate into silence and paralysis when you go to the nocturnal heaven where we cannot tread." The researcher paused, then aimed at the subject's heart and fired. The EEG flatlined, and the subject weakly choked out, "So nearly free." The original author of this story is unknown. It's been floating around the interwebs and been very popular for a very, very long time. But there is a full-length book and a more expanded story based off of this one, written by Holly Ice. The background music for this episode was created by Craig Kelman and Peter B. Helland. Links to their pages are in the bio. This is my first time, so it might not have been the best time ever. Definitely could have done some things better, I think, but overall I'm fairly happy with this episode, and they will get better over time, so bear with me, guys. Looking forward to seeing you guys for some next episodes. Next one probably won't be a creepypasta, as there's a huge UFC fight on tonight, and I will probably be doing an episode covering that. But in the meantime, stay freaky, you fucks. Much love. Hugs and kisses.